This is a podcast on higher education futures with Neil Stewart in conversation with Glyn Stanfield from Eversheds and Julie Mercer from Deloitte. Just going on to some of the issues about that have been raised about quality and teaching and learning. How vulnerable do you think some of the universities are, either to legal challenges? We see which the consumer organisation now being very active. We've had the Competition and Markets Authority sort of giving guidance to universities, but there is a rising discontent already amongst some students in the experience that they're going through. At the same time, we've seen the future of the QAA being questioned. There are universities who would like to be free of it, and yet in a business seminar I was at recently, the fact that there was a single standard setter in the UK was one of the biggest selling points for all the British universities. Yeah. Of course, some of the Russell Group could fly above all of that. Just quality teaching learning, and we've had, you know, suggestions that it's time for a teaching ref. Hefke are doing studies on learning gain. We're having another one of these academic moments when the words have to be defined over months and months, even though just about everybody knows what we're talking about. Glyn, do you want to?
I think the fact that there are three law firms set up to do nothing other than bring claims for students says quite a lot, doesn't it? I mean, you go back 10 years, there wasn't a single law firm that was established to bring claims. And obviously, part of it is around the fact that they think claims are to be made. Second is that they can charge what's called a contingency fee, which is a fee linked to the amount that they can win. And thirdly, they think that the average university has deep pockets and is willing to settle and is particularly keen to avoid any adverse PR. So we were seeing a lot of universities being faced with a barrage of claims from these firms, some of which were no more than thinly veiled attempts to obtain some very cheap and easy wins for them. If you look at it from a HR point of view, you could have argued there was something similar, and the introduction of what is, I guess, a relatively modest fee to bring an industrial tribunal claim has actually caused a big drop-off in employment claims. We haven't seen a similar drop-off actually in industrial tribunal claims brought in the HE sectors. If I look across the sectors that we service here, some sectors have suffered quite large drops in numbers of claims, or benefited from, I should say. Others have actually sort of stayed pretty flat, and the HE sector is one of those that stayed flat. So the introduction of the fee hasn't actually changed very much. I think this government being imposed means that zero-hour contracts are likely to be used an awful lot more than they were in the past. We've seen a great rise in zero-hour contracts, but it's quite clear, I suspect, we will see more of that and the rise of the casual labour.
You're talking about academic levels and
yes,
teaching?
Yes, I am.
Postgraduate
yes,
students basically
all,
filling gaps?
All levels. At all levels, absolutely. I mean, there's a number of new universities already use zero-hours contracts for some of their part-time teaching staff, and I understand why they do that. So I'm not saying they shouldn't do it, but I understand why they do it. So this government clearly will not back off on that. And in terms of, oh, we're also seeing the rise of the intern as well. Now, the intern is also sort of you could regard as a cheap form of labour, because the whole idea of an internship, clearly at the start, was it gave that individual some work experience. So if you look at some students coming out of university, it's obviously a good thing for them to do. But actually, if you actually see what you could regard as a serial internship, which is effectively a job which is filled by a number of interns one after the other, and that's becoming quite common, not so much in the university's public sector, but certainly the private university sector, that's quite common, that again might actually sort of damage the sort of jobs market and those individuals generally. There's also a sort of a new right for workers in the public sector to have 3 additional days of voluntary leave to carry out good works, community works it's called. And that again I think will have an impact on the sector, because it's 3 additional days leave they will have to give to their staff, and I'm sure they'll be quite happy to do it, but they will need to cover that as well. So I think from an employment point of view, I think it's going to be an interesting employment market. Certainly students, I've talked about the student claims. I think the fact that they're now paying serious amounts of money for the degree means that they will be expecting to get things. They are actually sort of, when they're signing their contracts, No, you get some students who actually seek to mark the contract up, to actually provide some commentary on the contract rather than simply sign the contract. So that shows the level it's at. So they actually want some guarantees as to the number of contact hours they're going to get. They may want some guarantees about the quality of the teaching staff. They may even want to be taught by Mr. X or Mrs. White. So it's at that level.
And have we either had test cases or precedent setting cases, or do you think there's a possibility in the next 2 years of any case going through and a judgment going against universities that requires them to recalibrate not just their contracts, because I know they've gone through them with a fine tooth comb to try and reduce the risks, but to recalibrate what they're delivering in practice, setting a new benchmark that delivers a shock?
I don't think there's any case that we've got going through at the moment that we're aware of which would actually cause a sort of a radical change of that type. But I think there is a risk that actually we may see something of that type in the next few years. And I guess, you know, what would reinforce that, particularly if the fees cap was to come off, I think, is that you're going to see high fees paid. We know it's a very tight and difficult jobs market for new graduates, so there's going to be a number of those that are going to struggle either to get work or to get work at the level they hoped to get. And that actually will then cause a sort of a double whammy for those individuals, turning individual into a rather disgruntled individual who will be looking for people to actually blame, and a university is a pretty obvious target group for them. And sometimes actually, you know, universities may not have actually sort of taught that student as they should have. I mean, it's open to everybody to have a bad experience, isn't it? And then just a final piece I just want to pick up is on the QAA, the future of the QAA. I think this government will go through, I think it has little choice but to go through with a tendering exercise for the services of the QAA. So we may not, I don't think we'll see the end of the type of services that the QAA provide. We may see the end of the QAA, of course, it will be forced to tender for its own work. I think there is a lot of misunderstanding in the sector, certainly outside the sector, as to what the role of the QAA is at the moment. The QAA itself has absolutely no powers, zero powers. It's not mentioned in any Act of Parliament. It simply acts as a contractor to BIS, so it carries out functions that sit within BIS. So it's perfectly open to BIS to seek to contract those functions to somebody else.
Thank you both, Julie Mercer from Deloitte and Glenn Stanfield from Eversheds. And this has been a policy
podcast
review
on higher education futures
of higher education with Neil Stewart in conversation with Glenn Stanfield from Eversheds and Julie Mercer from Deloitte.